Welcome to episode 38 of the Cancer Pod. In this episode, we're talking about L-glutamine. What is it? What is it used for? Is it safe for cancer patients to take? Answers to these questions and more are coming up, so stick around.
I'm Dr. Tina Kayser, and as Leah likes to say, I'm the sciencey one.
And I'm Dr. Leah Sherman, and I'm the cancer insider.
And we're two naturopathic doctors who practice integrative cancer care.
But we're not your doctors.
This is for education, entertainment, and informational purposes only.
Do not apply any of this information without first speaking to your doctor.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast by the hosts and their guests are solely their own.
Welcome to the Cancer Pod. Good morning, Tina.
Hi, Leah.
I sounded so professional. Good morning, Tina.
I know, that's awfully formal.
I know, I was trying to mix it up a bit. So today we're talking about glutamine.
Yeah, glutamine, the amino acid.
It's something that I think a lot of people have heard of. Cancer patients ask about it a lot. Mm-hmm. And it can be kind of controversial.
Yeah. You've heard about it. You've read about it. And now we're going to discuss it.
Oh, that's perfect. I'm going to copy that for my intro. L-glutamine. So like you said, it is an amino acid. And what are amino acids? Those are building blocks for protein.
Yep. I always describe it. If a protein was a train, then each amino acid is a container car. So they link together. The only difference is it actually in the body folds upon itself and becomes more of a 3D thing. So if you took a model train and balled it up, I suppose, it would look like a protein.
There are essential amino acids, and there are conditional amino acids and then non-essential amino acids. Mm-hmm. So glutamine, what are you?
Glutamine is considered a conditionally essential amino acid.
Yep.
Much like arginine is conditionally essential as well. Those two are probably the number one amino acids that we give to people as a supplement that are conditionally essential. When they say conditionally essential, it means there are scenarios in which the body requires it to be taken in orally. When everything is good and you're healthy, it's non-essential. But let's just say you underwent a severe injury that required a lot of repair of tissue. Burns are a classic example. Someone gets burned in a large amount of their body, then glutamine becomes essential, meaning those people need to take it in orally.
So people do use it in like non kind of severe conditions. You can find glutamine in like post-workout supplements, mm-hmm. you know, because it helps with muscle repair because it's most abundantly found in skeletal muscle. It is found in digestive formulas, things that help repair the intestinal lining, heartburn type of supplement formulas. Why else do people take glutamine that's outside of oncology? I mean, I've had patients just taking it because they heard it was good for you. And I'm like, maybe not. Like, maybe you shouldn't just take it willy-nilly. I'm saying willy-nilly again. I thought I was going to leave that with neuropathy, but no, I'm bringing it to this episode.
Let's just keep willy-nilly as part of our vocab here.
That's going to be our thing. That's going to be a t-shirt. Willy-nilly.
Let's make this as simple as possible. Should I or shouldn't I take this willy-nilly?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just kind of go down the list.
Yeah.
In the case of glutamine, you don't want to just take it willy-nilly.
No, because you're getting it in your diet. I mean, it's in any sort of protein. It makes up protein. So you're getting it whether you're eating plants, whether you're eating animals. You're getting more of it if you're eating animals because it's inside of skeletal muscle.
Right. So the muscle of any animal you eat would be a lot of glutamine because that's where we store most of ours as well.
Yeah. So yeah, it does depend if you're going to like prime rib night, you know, are you getting like the super giant, I don't know, 24-ounce prime rib versus like the 6-ounce prime rib. So yeah, that kind of varies as to how much glutamine you're getting.
Yeah, I call those giant portions Bam Bam. Remember on the Flintstones?
Yeah.
They put down a like half of a dinosaur rack of ribs on the plate.
I think of it as once after seeing the Green Bay Packers play in Lambeau, we went to the Brett Favre Steakhouse and they had like the biggest servings. I mean, they had different sizes of servings of prime rib, but then like they had like this super grande. I mean, it was massive. It was like, yeah, no human could really eat that whole thing without getting a bad case of meat sweats.
I don't even know what meat sweats are, and I don't think I want to know. But I think this reminds me just of this moment. You just don't see this in Europe. I mean, they just don't serve the portions we serve of meat here, ever.
No, I mean,
I think that's one of the reasons Mediterranean diets and stuff, and we talk about the contents of it, but we really should talk about proportions in when we talk about comparisons of diets, because a small amount of meat is probably perfectly fine. It's the fact that we eat half a plate or a whole plate.
Right. We're not eating a 3 to 4 ounce serving. We're eating like a 30 ounce serving. But yet we digress.
Anyways.
So yeah, there are times, like you said, there are times when there is a higher need after surgery, in case of burns, definitely higher need for a glutamine intake.
Mm-hmm. Also in the case of pregnancy, women have to get adequate protein when they're pregnant. But yeah, that's what makes it conditional.
That's overall.
Yes.
Protein, not just specifically glutamine.
No, glutamine's conditionally essential for the pregnant woman is what I'm saying.
Because it's part of the protein or glutamine specifically?
Because pregnancy in the grand scheme is a major stressor on the body. So it is conditionally essential. When we say conditionally essential, the conditions are major need for glutamine.
But that's not a time that one would supplement with it.
No. But that's when protein needs go higher, partly because glutamine needs to be eaten at that moment for those months.
And there are congenital glutamine deficiencies, but babies don't live that long. So
Okay. So for the biochemistry aspect, just to geek out for a moment, we all have an enzyme called glutamine synthetase. And glutamine synthetase is what allows us to make glutamine from ammonia, for example. So we can make glutamine in our bodies with glutamine synthetase, but we can't keep up with the body's needs during pregnancy, during major burns, maybe during major surgery recovery, right? So the conditions are major stressors on the body when the need of glutamine is high, or of course, if someone has a glutamine synthetase that doesn't work, but like you mentioned, if it doesn't work completely, that's something
that's not a viable, I mean.
Right. That's an inborn error of metabolism, which means that the baby will not survive that unless it's caught extremely early. I don't know.
I don't think that it's survivable. Anyway, is it anyway or anyways? Anywho. So we kind of covered glutamine basics. Oh, I guess like foods. The one vegetable I think of with glutamine is cabbage. I don't know why. I think because we're kind of taught that that's really like a good source of glutamine.
I think that's exactly why. Yeah. Part of our education. Yeah.
Yeah. You like blend cabbage and drink it if you've got GI disorders? I don't remember. Something that sounds vaguely familiar in my head.
No, you're right. That's exactly it. I mean, glutamine is, as far as vegetables go, higher in cabbage. And I think a traditional use of cabbage was to juice it and use it for upper GI issues.
That's right. It was juicing it, mm-hmm. Not blending it. It was juicing the cabbage. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick little musical break and come back, and we will talk about the uses of glutamine in oncology and if there's research to back it up. And then we'll talk about cautions, contraindications, those kinds of things.
All right. So glutamine is an amino acid and it is offered as a supplement. And so let's talk about when we use it as a supplement in cancer care.
It's one of those things that it can be used in chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and it's even used in parenteral nutrition formulas, which is the IV nutrition someone will get if they need bowel rest or they need to get a nutrition because there's some sort of obstruction. It's often administered through your port, and glutamine is included in there as well.
So the parenteral nutrition goes into the port or directly into the bloodstream, and then there's the tube feedings that go directly into the GI tract, either the stomach or the small intestines. And those two will have glutamine added sometimes because, again, it's conditionally essential. So if someone's critically ill in any way, for whatever reason, there's enough metabolic stress on the body, it becomes required. Okay, so when we're talking about glutamine being conditionally essential, we're talking about enough in the diet to make sure someone's not depleted in it. When we're applying it for chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery, it can be in that sense where we're just giving enough, or it can be in very large doses. So let's talk about that. And let's start with chemo specifically.
Yeah. And for all of the large doses that we're talking about, it's not IV. We're talking, this is oral intake only as mm-hmm. a supplement. So chemotherapy, we touched on this on our neuropathy episode, but neuropathy is one of the reasons that we would recommend high dose glutamine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's probably the number one reason, you think, like of doing it really high dose, as in 30 grams a day kind of dose.
Yeah, with chemo. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's been studied with paclitaxel and with oxaliplatin.
Well, I think the oxaliplatin and the taxane drugs in general, paclitaxel, docetaxel, I think that those are the ones where it has been shown to work. So those are the ones we tend to remember. So each one in our neuropathy episode, you and I went into this in detail, but they each drug that causes neuropathy has a different mechanism. So one agent that works for one chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy will not necessarily work for another chemotherapy agent.
Because they're not all the same. Yeah, they're not all the same.
Yes.
Targets of the drug on the nerve.
Yeah.
I've used it in lower doses for the mouth sores, the mucositis, stomatitis. That can happen mm-hmm. too.
And for lower doses, I would say that's somewhere between 1 and 3 grams as a supplement. What's your low dose?
I do 10, but I don't have them swallow.
Oh, you mean swish and spit for their mouth sores?
Yeah, swish and spit, I usually say 10.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, I will often have people take a little bit of powder, 1 to 2 grams, put it in some water, swish it. And I would say I have them swallow it more often than spit it myself when I recommend it to patients, because I make an assumption if they have inflammation of the mucosa or there's any mucositis in the mouth, it may be farther down as well. So I just have them go ahead and swallow.
I guess I have them do both. I mean, I think I have them do, you can swallow and then you can swish and spit, you know, like you can kind of, because it's not like one mouthful is going to be that high of a dose.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is interesting is it's often recommended to be put in water or juice, and then it's recommended to swish. But if somebody puts it in juice, I don't really like them to swish.
Mm, good point.
I don't think you should swish juice in your mouth.
No, no. And juices are always acidic.
Yeah. And just, you know, the fact that your teeth are at higher risk of compromise during treatment anyways. But, and then glutamine can also be recommended for people who have diarrhea. And again, I don't think the juice is a great form of delivery for that because it's so high in sugar that it can actually aggravate diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. I think they say juice because that way people are not taking it with an amino acid, another amino acid, because for absorption's sake, it's not competing.
Oh, interesting. I thought it was just because
the taste.
I didn't find it had a taste, but there are people who do report it having a taste, which I think is interesting. I don't know if that's like the whole cilantro type thing, but
You know what? I think it's brand. I think some of it's cleaner than others out there. We're talking about a purified amino acid in a powder form. And when I had patients take the one that I would recommend in office, that is professional line and very clean, they didn't taste anything. But if they went to GNC or whatever store, Costco or wherever, and they get a powder, they would report that it tasted bad. And I saw this over time enough that I was like, you are welcome to try the other one, but this is my experience. So you know what we should do?
What should we do, Tina?
We should get a few brands and do a taste test blindfolded.
Well, I thought that I had...
Wait a second. You're not taking me up or you're not taking
no,
me up?
No, I really don't know. You know what? I once did a taste test. A patient said that a supplement powder tasted really bad. It was modified citrus pectin. And they were like, this is really gross. And they brought it in and I tasted it and I didn't think it was that gross. So I think part of it is if you have taste changes from chemotherapy, are you picking something up in the glutamine powder?
Sure.
Again, I took it. The thing I found the hardest was the fact it would not dissolve and you have to keep adding liquid and doing the, I don't know, it's like a cocktail swirl. What is that swirl? Like as if you're wine tasting and you're swirling your glass. You have to keep doing that because it just doesn't dissolve.
So you want them to take it shaken, not stirred, or stirred, not shaken?
You could shake it. You could stir it. Just kind of get it so it's floating around in there.
Yeah. My taste test in single patients, N of one kind of thing. I think the same person trying 2 different brands clearly showed a differential between brands out there. So yeah. So it'd be interesting to see if someone doesn't like the taste.
If they switch a brand. No, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because people do like to pick it up because they see it at stores where they're really pushing those workout formulas, post-workout formulas, I should say.
Yeah.
So that's how most people know it.
Yeah. And the unfortunate truth is supplement quality is not regulated to the point of purity that we would like. I always tell people, don't buy the cheapest thing, right? Because you can guarantee they didn't spend the money on quality assurance.
And we should mention that glutamine at 30 grams, that's not something you do in capsules. I have had patients who've gone out and bought capsules, and that is a heck of a lot of capsules because capsules are usually about 500 to 1,000 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could do the math from there. That's a lot to take if you're trying to use it to reduce your risk of neuropathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, the reason we say these large doses for neuropathy from a taxane or from oxaliplatin specifically is because that's how studies were done, right? Studies use 30 grams. We're not making that up, is my point. These aren't numbers that we're just pulling out of the air or from our own experience.
They're not willy-nilly.
This is not being said willy-nilly.
This is not willy-nilly dose. Okay. Radiation is the other time when we use the really high dose. And that is for patients with head and neck cancer who are undergoing chemo radiation, if people are getting radiation to their GI tract in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because glutamine is it's a preferred fuel source for the actual cells lining the intestines. So the mucosal cells, the small intestinal cells, all of these cells like to use glutamine for their own energy pathways and their own health. We'll just leave it at that. And so when you're taking a small amount of glutamine in, I have people do it in a more constant stream when I'm treating their GI tract. So I'll have them dissolve it and then kind of sip it throughout the day or drink it three different times in a day.
I'm doing the finger quotes, dissolve it.
Yeah.
It doesn't dissolve. You have to shake it. But yes. Yeah. So you do. I've even had patients just kind of put it all in a bottle of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that what you mean? Like you just have it all get mixed up in a bottle and then you carry that bottle with you and three times a day you
drink it down.
Vigorously shake it.
Slurry it up. Yep.
Mix it up.
And then take it throughout the day. Yeah. And that way the small intestinal cells, the cells lining your whole GI tract take in a little bit. It really doesn't reach your bloodstream if it's not a large dose because the first cells it sees take it into their cells. They don't let it go through the cell. They don't let it go around the cell. They want it. So they take in the glutamine for their own health and their own benefit, which is great because we want those cells to be repairing. We want them to take the glutamine in. So that's when we do a kind of slow and steady dose throughout the day for the GI tract is how I think of it.
And that would be constant throughout radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So what we didn't talk about was that there's a very specific regimen on how many days you use the L-glutamine powder mm-hmm. when you're receiving chemotherapy. So for paclitaxel, you start taking it 24 hours after your infusion and you continue it for 4 days. Mm-hmm. And then for oxaliplatin, you start taking it the day of infusion and you continue it for 7 days.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that particular trial, they did oxaliplatin every 2 weeks. So they were on the glutamine every other week in that trial they were talking about with high dose L-glutamine and neuropathy.
Which would be like a FOLFOX regimen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was part of a FOLFOX in that case. And what was interesting, it wasn't just neuropathy. They had benefits across the board. And we refer to these studies because like in that study, for example, they also saw the response rate to the chemotherapy was no different between the groups.
Right, right. And that's the really important part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that is the perfect natural or complementary intervention, something that lowers a side effect, improves your quality of life in real time, and doesn't interfere with the chemotherapy while you're getting it. So that's
the trifecta.
That is the trifecta. That's what we're looking for in natural agents and any agent. I don't care if it's natural or prescriptive or whatever, but that's the ideal agents. And that's why when we talk about these items, we don't discuss things that are not clinically proven to not interfere because we could give a lot of different things that might lower neuropathy because there's plenty in the natural realm and in the plant kingdom that work on nerves, but we don't assume that they're safe. We have to see that they're proven to be safe alongside. So I'm just being really clear that we're picky because we don't want to interfere with the chemo. We just assume everything that could benefit in lower side effect may interfere with chemo unless proven otherwise.
Right, because there are also natural agents that people can take during radiation that may lessen the mucositis, the mouth sores that they get. But again, is that interfering with their radiation? So glutamine has been shown to be safe.
That's what's important.
I mean, finally, surgery is the other part where glutamine can be used, you know, post-surgical. Actually, it's in that formula that I mentioned in, was it collagen, where I talked about Juven? Juven is a powder that can be taken twice a day leading up to certain surgeries, and then you continue it for, I believe it's 2 weeks after surgery as well. And each packet contains 7 grams of glutamine in it, so you're getting a dosage of 14 grams a day. And that is where I've seen glutamine used most around surgery. If somebody is going through, especially some sort of abdominal surgery,
okay,
Juven can be recommended to help with wound healing. And then I also recall seeing studies where they were using it to decrease the risk of post-operative ileus.
Yeah, because ileus could be severe, because ileus is stoppage of the flow of the contents of the bowels. So it can be a severe after effect of surgery. So yeah, anything that can prevent that is high on the list of to-dos.
Which is why I think that's why the Juven was recommended at the previous hospital where I worked, to kind of just improve all those kinds of possible outcomes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So far we have glutamine in lower doses when there's a major stress on the body of any kind. Major stress being a physical stress. I'm not talking about psychological stressors here. I'm talking about a major physical stressor on the body, whether it's a burn, yes, pregnancy, that's a high stress on the body, and surgery, and maybe even radiation when it covers a large area, or even chemotherapy. So think of glutamine as an amino acid being essential in times of major physical stress. If you're otherwise healthy and you're post-treatment, you should be able to get plenty in your diet. There's no need for it. And then we use it in high dose in certain scenarios where it's been proven to be useful, like damage from radiation and neuropathy and prevention of diarrhea in certain cases, that kind of thing.
Right. And I do know that that glutamine has been used in high dose in patients receiving stem cell transplants. The study I think of offhand is the one where patients with multiple myeloma, and because it can decrease mucositis. But wasn't it also used in pediatric oncology to reduce mucositis, stomatitis?
And I wonder if this just goes under the whole heading of conditionally essential, right? I mean, stem cell transplants are a massive assault on the body. And so recovery, I can see how it could be beneficial as a conditionally essential amino acid, given the massive stress on the body.
And glutamine also is fuel for immune cells.
Yeah, and that's why it's conditionally essential. Like, our body will prioritize functions, whether it is heart, brain, liver, the functionality of the body is prioritized. So the enzymes that are working to make glutamine will prioritize the use of glutamine in those systems over wound healing. So wound healing or any kind of damage to the body may not get the required glutamine because the glutamine is being used in more essential systems of the body.
But I think that's a good segue for us to then talk about cautions, contraindications, interactions of L-glutamine.
So let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about that.
All righty. Okay, Tina, when do you not recommend L-glutamine?
I am careful with L-glutamine post-treatment in general for people. And one of the things after treatment we always think about is sometimes there's still cancer present, and we know that, right? So in cases of people with metastatic cancers, and it's going to be more of a chronic condition that we're treating, they might not be getting active treatment. They get a period of time that they're not getting any conventional treatment maybe, or they're on a maintenance drug, you know, an oral medication or something. I'm really careful when I know cancer is present because glutamine is second only to glucose in basically what cancer cells like to use for their own fuel and their own proliferation. So
it's the preferential diet.
It is a preferential diet. So among the amino acids, there's a few of them that cancers like, but glutamine is high up on that list. Now, that said, just like glucose, you cannot be without glutamine. It's not conducive to living. So you can't take it down to zero. You can't deprive yourself of glutamine because your body will just go and get it from muscle. There will always be plenty of glutamine in the body. But that said, I will not give large doses. Like, To me, large doses are any dose over 3 to 5 grams at once. I would do 5 grams over the course of a day, knowing that it won't go in the bloodstream that way. I would not give higher doses than 5 grams at one time, though. That's where I have the cutoff. When people have cancer active or a likely, you know, occult cancer that might be still in their body.
And that's important to point out because, as we mentioned in the neuropathy episode, people are sometimes taking L-glutamine powder for residual neuropathy after treatment has ended. You're making a face because you've seen this.
Yeah, I've seen it too. And it's the classic extrapolation of information without knowing where it came from. So if you don't know the start of the information, it's because these clinical trials showed using it short term right around chemo worked. There's nothing about glutamine that should ameliorate neuropathy by itself. So there's no reason to take it. There's no benefit, even theoretically.
Yeah. And that's a pet peeve.
Right. Because it's all risk, no benefit. Even if the risk, even if we're just talking in theory and not proven, there's at least a theoretical risk of, in air quotes, feeding the cancer what it wants, while there is no use and there's not even a premise for helping with neuropathy at high doses or even, you know, adequate doses. I mean, we have to remember, even on the grand spectrum of deficiency to mega dosing, glutamine deficiency doesn't show up as neuropathy either, right? So there's nowhere in the spectrum of neuropathy that glutamine would be applied to say it would ameliorate symptoms, except during chemotherapy, where it's been proven.
She's stepping off her soapbox now.
Yeah, I'm done now.
Mic drop. So I avoid using L-glutamine powder in patients who have been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer because I worked with a medical oncologist who his focus was on GI cancers, and he wasn't comfortable with it because both glucose and glutamine-dependent pathways are important for pancreatic cancer cells. And mm-hmm. So he was just like, don't use glutamine because of what you were saying in terms of it being part of a cancer cell's preferential diet. Mm-hmm. Diet is in quotes. It's in finger quotes. But yeah, it's the same reason why patients with pancreatic cancer, it's important for them to regulate their blood sugar. Mm-hmm. All cancer patients, it's important to maintain an even steady blood sugar level. But I think especially with pancreatic cancer.
Yeah. And how glutamine is treated by the entire body, like by our organ systems and how it's distributed, is different when there is cancer present as opposed when there's not cancer present. So I'd like to, on our webpage, I'm going to put up a picture that kind of shows how the glutamine switches, how glutamine trafficking around the body. It makes it sound like a drug trafficking. No, glutamine trafficking around the body, meaning which organs take it up the most and which ones donate it to the cause of metabolism. So the cancer, long story short, takes up a lot of glutamine if it's available. So I think pancreatic cancer is one of those. I mean, it might take up more than even other types of tumors.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to see if I could find the study that, you know, was the trigger for him saying, don't use this. And I don't remember what it was specifically. Mm-hmm. Also caution with patients who have leukemia or lymphoma.
Okay.
At high doses, mm-hmm. because of the fact that we said that glutamine is a fuel for immune system cells.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yeah. Since I do it across the board, so I would include those in my recommendations to people to not do high dose.
And then liver disease and kidney disease is a caution to take the really high doses. Glutamine is a source of nitrogen. Mm-hmm. And so high nitrogen is not good in those conditions.
Yeah, because ammonia is involved here. The body makes ammonia and we have to release it and remove it. And if we have compromised liver function, sometimes we have trouble getting rid of ammonia. And that can lead to some severe side effects. And the ammonia has effects on the brain that can have effects on someone's actions. So you can have anxiety, you can have anger, you can have a dullness, you can have cognitive difficulties.
Well, and then even hepatic encephalitis.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's what my dad had. And that
he did.
Yeah, because of his liver cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's from high, it can be from high ammonia levels. So yeah, you don't want to mess with that.
Right.
Glutamine also is what makes up neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, it can be excitatory in some people. I remember initially learning not to use glutamine in patients who have bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. or to use caution when using it in patients with bipolar disorder. And it may actually increase seizures in some people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it can be in high doses. It transfers over to glutamate very easily. So glutamine to glutamate is a very easy pathway in the body. And generally, that's in equilibrium. And so if you give a lot of glutamine, you're going to have, as a result, plenty of glutamate. Glutamate in the brain is what we call an excitatory neurotransmitter. So glutamate can be something that in adequate levels helps you focus and be alert. For some people with certain conditions, like bipolar, or in some people who are more sensitive, high amounts of glutamate in the brain can be counterproductive, can actually be harmful. So a classic example of glutamate that people might be familiar with that they take in and maybe they even avoid is MSG. It's monosodium glutamate. And some people, when they take an MSG, they get a headache or they feel jacked or whatever. They can have side effects of that. So if you're sensitive to MSG, for example, you might be someone who's very careful about taking high doses of glutamine because you may have a similar reaction.
I was going to ask you, that was going to be my question for you.
Oh.
That's okay.
That's because we've been talking so long and we chat so much. I already know what you're going to ask me. Maybe I already knew that.
Oh, no. Next comes finishing my sentences. But yeah, no, I was going to ask that because I think that's a big question
mm-hmm.
that people want to know. Like, is this the same as monosodium glutamate? And, you know, for some people, they're not affected by MSG mm-hmm. because it can be in very low doses. But it's when that, like you're saying, that glutamate is in a really high dose that you would be concerned.
Yeah. I'm one of those people. I get massive headaches from MSG.
I do too. I do. I get, it feels like a vice is on my head. And I've experimented too, because I was like, maybe this isn't really what's happening, but it happens with me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've gotten that headache and then looked back and went, oh, right. That's probably what happened. I had that bento bowl or ramen noodle dish or whatever. When you're out and about, they'll put MSG in some things like that.
And it's not the fact that they just put in MSG. It's that they put in copious amounts of MSG.
Yes. Yes.
So again, it's
dose dependent.
Yeah.
See? Look at that.
Oh my God. Jinx, you owe me a Coke. Stop. I did see that there were a couple of interactions, supplement drug interactions. One was with lactulose, which I've seen it most used as a laxative.
Mm-hmm.
And the interaction doesn't matter if you're using it just as a laxative, but glutamine can reduce the ammonia-lowering effect of lactulose, which is what's given when somebody has hepatic encephalopathy. Because of high ammonia levels, glutamine, because it is a nitrogen donor, can counter that. The other time is glutamine may increase tumor retention of methotrexate, which would increase its therapeutic efficacy, according to Memorial Sloan Kettering. So I would never use it for that. I would never use it to increase.
I've never applied it in that sense.
Yeah. And it's not something that I would necessarily, consider using it for. I don't see a lot of patients getting methotrexate anyways, but.
Well, that would be interesting. I want to look up more about that because I know intravenous methotrexate as a single agent is used at times with primary CNS, central nervous system lymphomas. And because it's being used as a curative treatment, the key is getting enough into the tumor to actually take all of it out. Like literally, you got one shot, you go through that course of treatment. And if you recur after you get that, then you're going to be recurring. If you come out the other side and you don't recur, then it looks curative. So because you're kind of aiming for the fences with that particular treatment. Glutamine alongside it, if it potentiates that treatment without any other untoward effects, it might be something to look at.
Well, I'll put the link in the bio that I found through Memorial Sloan Kettering. And again, if you want to start taking something, talk to your medical oncologist, talk to your doctor.
Yeah. And that's what the links are for that we leave in our show notes and on our website is so that people can go from there and begin their own research or take that right to your medical oncologist and have a conversation, you know? So these are supposed to be spurring conversations and thoughts.
Because we're not your doctor. And we haven't said that in a while. So I feel like I had to say it. Anyways, anything else? Any other tidbits, notes, asides?
Nope. I'm fresh out of ideas on L-glutamine. So technically, this is our first amino acid, a whole episode on one amino acid, right?
Right. Of all of the supplements, we have not done an amino acid yet. Are there others that we would cover?
No, we probably would do a few in one. So we could do like branched chain amino acids. So there'd be three in that episode.
Yeah.
But yeah. You're not very excited about that idea.
I don't typically recommend branched chain amino acids. Hmm. Should I be? We'll find out. We'll have to do an episode. Tune in and find out. So as always, leave us a review. Let us know what you're thinking.
Oh, yes. You mean some feedback that we got email and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're continuing with the Supplements 101. I think people really like to know about supplements. So you can write in and say, hey, this is a supplement I want to know more about. That's how we chose glutamine, was because I had a couple of people saying, hey, can you guys talk about glutamine?
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. You ask and we deliver.
We're like DJs. We take requests.
We take requests, but not all requests.
This is the love line. Do you have any requests out there tonight?
Oh, I was thinking at a party or at a club, you know, I have friends who are DJs and people would come up and would ask for them to play stuff. And like, they were like, I wouldn't even have that record.
Oh, well, we're not so snooty as your DJ friends.
Oh, I'm totally as snooty as my DJ friends. They're my friends. Anyways, on that note, I'm Dr. Leah Sherman.
And I'm Dr. Tina Kayser.
And this is The Cancer Pod.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening to The Cancer Pod. Remember to subscribe, review, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media for updates. And as always, this is not medical advice. These are our opinions. Talk to your doctor before changing anything related to your treatment plan. The Cancer Pod is hosted by me, Dr. Leah Sherman, and by Dr. Tina Kayser. Music is by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.
Chop this like a salad.